Continuing our morning session, we have Juan and Alberto from iRobot giving us a perspective on consumer robotics.
Good morning to everyone. I'm Alberto from iRobot, and today with my colleague Juan, we are talking about the iRobot use case for ROS2 in consumer robotics. During this presentation, we are going to go through our experience with ROS2 in the last month. We're going to present our requirements for using ROS2 in consumer robotics, and we're going to evaluate whether ROS meets these requirements or not. And then we're going to show some improvement that we contributed to the ROS community and some ideas for future works. At iRobot, we produce a variety of consumer robots for the home care, from the Roomba vacuum cleaner robot to the Brava mopping robot and our recently launched Terra lawnmower robot. All these robots implement autonomous navigation solutions that are state-of-the-art at a reasonable price. During these talks, during these days, we saw the advantages and the capabilities of ROS2. So it's definitely an interesting framework for everyone in robotics. One of the claims of ROS2 is that it's suitable for a wide variety of platforms. We have ROS2 on desktop applications, we have micro ROS for microcontroller, but what about everything that is in the middle? Is ROS2 suitable for Linux-based, low-cost, embedded platforms? Because this is our target. And today, during this talk, is what we are going to investigate this area. Let's start from defining our use case. At iRobot, we use low-cost, Linux-based, embedded hardware on all our robots. We run our navigation solution as a single process application. It performs all the computation required for the robot operations. So all the computation happens inside the robot. During the development stage, it's important to note that we operate thousands of robots under the same network. These are our main requirements. This is our use case, needs all these things. Let's see if ROS2 can satisfy all of them. First of all, we're going to look into performances. We need to define a target platform for our experiment. We chose the Raspberry Pi 2. The Raspberry Pi 2 has around 900 MHz ARM CPU and 1 GB of RAM. We chose this platform because it has very similar resource capabilities to what we actually use. Moreover, it's widely adopted in the robotics community. So we hope that you'll be able to replicate and validate our experiment that we're going to show here today. Oops. We already have our autonomous navigation solution. It's already running on our platforms that is similar to a Raspberry Pi 2. Transitioning to ROS2 implies that this doesn't add a relevant overhead in terms of performances. In particular, a requirement for ROS2 is that it has to add less than 20% CPU usage, less than 20 megabytes of RAM usage. The latency has to remain almost negligible with respect to a non-ROS2 single process application. Moreover, we cannot tolerate any lost messages. All these, we think they are fundamental requirements in order to a company to switch from a non-ROS application in order to a ROS2-based application. So let's see if we are going to be able to meet all these requirements.
So we started creating, trying to measure all these metrics that we were interested in. For that, we looked into some performance frameworks. There's the well-known is the one from the Apex AI guys, which is really good. But we wanted to have something different, and we wanted to have the ability to choose or to create the topology that we wanted to have. So we wanted to simulate almost exactly the system that we would be running in our robots, right? So we created a new framework that tries to simulate a ROS2 system, a whole ROS2 system, and we do this by creating a JSON file where we write all the topology, where all the all the nodes, the publisher, the subscribers, type of messages, period of messages. We run this simulation for some time, and then we get some results. And of course, we open source this, so you can try it if you want. So the idea, again, we input a topology file that I'm going to show you how it looks like. The system runs the simulation for a user-defined time, and then we get output of RAM, CPU, statistics about the latency of the messages, and some special events that are relevant for the system. So this is a sample JSON file. You can see that you can specify the different nodes. You can specify the publishers of the nodes, subscribers. You can specify the message type, the size of the message too, if it's a dynamic message, the period, quality of service, and more other things. So given this format, you can create arbitrary complex topologies. And for the output, we get a couple of files. In this case, the resource file that is sampling the memory usage and the CPU usage at different times. We have a events file that will log special events. For example, when some messages are later than expected, when discovery has finished, and so forth. Lost messages, for example. And then we have some latency statistics. That we have the mean latency, standard deviation, mean max. And we also have, regarding latency, we have some classification of messages regarding latency. The thing is that absolute values of latency without taking into account the period of the message of how often are we sending the message may not be as useful. So let's say that if a message arrives within 20% of the period of that message, we classify that message as on time. If it's later than that, we classify it as late. If it's greater than the latency is greater than one period, we classify it as too late. The idea is that our system can work with a couple late messages because, I mean, we need some time to process the message after we get it. But if we get a lot of too late messages, our system is not going to work correctly. The user can change how the late or too late messages are classified or defined.
Using the performance framework that we just described, we are able to create arbitrary topologies. For example, this one that you can see here is a topology that exactly mimics our navigation architecture. We have something around 20 nodes, 25 publisher, 40 subscriptions. The size of the messages, we have some messages of 250 kilobytes, some topics with messages of 250 kilobytes, while all the other topics have messages of size ranging from a few kilobytes to few bytes. For what concerns the frequency, most of the topics run at 100 Hz, most of the publisher runs 100 Hz, while the most heavy publisher have a slower frequency. We are going to use this topology with our performance evaluation framework in order to evaluate whether ROS2 meets our performance requirements. These are the results that we got using default ROS implementation. This is dashing using default configuration and faster TPS. In red, you can see the target that we defined before. As you can see, none of our metrics is respected. All our targets are exceeded. The CPU usage, in particular, is 33% instead of 20, and the RAM usage is 150 megabytes instead of 20 megabytes. Also, the latency and the reliability are worse than expected, but still not as problematic as the CPU and the RAM. We did some investigation after these results, and we found out that both the DDS as well as the RCL-CPP layer influence the CPU and the latency. On the other hand, for what concerns the RAM usage, most of it comes from the DDS layer. So, given this knowledge, we tried to get better results changing something in our system. The first thing that we changed has been the DDS. So we tested many different DDS implementations. We obtained the best results using Cyclone DDS. You can see how all our metrics, simply switching from FastRTPS to Cyclone DDS, respects our target. The CPU usage decreases from 33% to 13%. The RAM usage goes from 150 megabyte to 15 megabyte, and we basically have no late and no lost messages. This is a huge improvement in terms of performance. It's simply changing the DDS implementation. However, as we said before, not all the overhead comes from the DDS layer. So this means that it's still possible to use any DDS implementation if some changes are applied. First of all, we looked at why the RAM usage is so high. The DDS specification requires that every time a node discovers some entities, it creates proxy objects for these entities. These proxy objects contain information about the direction to reach this entity, information about the quality of service, and so on. Obviously, the size of this object depends on the DDS implementation, but the specification itself requires that you create all of them. This means that these objects are created as your system is fully connected. In a real application, a real robotics application, you almost never gonna have a fully connected system where all the nodes communicate with each other on all the available topics. This looks like a huge waste of resources. So what we did is that we tried to relax this constraint. We introduced a blacklist into the DDS. This means that during discovery, when a node receives discovery information from another node, if the second node is part of the blacklist, it will discard the discovery information, and it will act as if the other node has not been discovered. This implies that only the nodes that we know in advance have to communicate with each other are going to discover each other. Reduce the memory usage from 150 megabyte to less than 70 megabytes. It's a very huge reduction with a very simple change that is very reasonable in our use case, because we know the topology of the system in our robot. We know which topics are going to be used in each node and which kind of communication is going to happen. Another way for improving the ROS2 performance is through the intra-process manager. The inter-process manager is the component of the RCL-CPP layer that is in charge of the communication within the same process. ROS2 provides this component. The problem is that we tested the dashing version of this component, and we found out that the performance of this tool were not as satisfactory as expected. In particular, we found out that for our system, the CPU usage and the latency were almost the same with and without intra-process communication. The reason is that this intra-process manager was working through the use of meta-messages. These meta-messages were sent, were containing something like a memory address. So the publisher, instead of sending the real message, was sending to the subscription a memory address to let the subscription know when the message was possible to be retrieved. This means that the DDS was still inside the loop. We were using intra-process communication, but the DDS was not being excluded from the loop. The only improvement that we saw were with the very big messages that had a size of orders of magnitude bigger than these meta messages that were sent in order to enable intra-process. So what we did is a redesign of the intra-process manager focused on improving the performance. The main feature of this new intra-process manager that has been recently merged into the ROS2 master, and so you'll find it into the next release, ROS Eloquent, is that the communication happens exclusively within the RCL-CPP layer. This allows to have standard performance regardless of the DDS implementation that you use in terms of CPU usage and latency. we found a huge reduction of these two metrics in all the DDS. After this new intra-process communication manager is based on the use of buffers in every subscription. What happens is that when you want to publish an intra-process message, the publisher is going to push a copy of the message or a pointer to this message into the subscription buffers. The intra-process manager, at the same time, will be able to trigger a guard condition on the subscription side. This guard condition will let the subscription know that a new message is available inside the buffer, and so this message can be retrieved. This is a very simple implementation. Obviously, it's not perfect. It has some drawbacks, but we think that the gain in performance is so relevant that it exceeds the problems of this implementation. By the way, the problems would be that not all the quality of service would be possible to be applied. But this is focused for use in a single process application where you are satisfied with the default and the simple quality of service. These are the performance of the first experiment that we did, so everything default, fast RTPS, and the new IPC. There's a huge reduction in CPU usage from 33% to 14%, almost the same number that we got with Cyclone DDS. We have no late messages, no lost messages. The absolute latency is also very small, in the order of microseconds instead of milliseconds. The RAM is still very high because the intra-process manager doesn't affect the RAM allocation. However, you may still notice that in the previous experiment, we reached 150 megabytes of RAM usage with faster TPS, while here we have 120. The reason of this reduction is that the old intra-process manager, in order to send these meta messages, was basically doubling the number of publisher and subscription. The addition of this publisher and subscriptions was causing this additional 30 megabytes that have been now removed. So we think that these improvements allow to use any kind of DDS application. They can be applied to Cyclone DDS as well, improving the performance, even if the improvement is not as noticeable as with fast RTPS or with other DDS implementation, where, except for the RAM usage, we have been able to meet all our requirements on all our metrics.
All right, now we're shifting a little bit. One of the use cases here at iRobot, one of the problems is that when we are developing, we have a lot of robots in our network, and in this case, if each robot will be running a Rust system, there will be around 35 topics coming out from each robot. And imagine 1,000 robots all around the world, 35 topics from robots, and 5 different subnetworks, one in London, one in Pasadena, one in Boston, etc. So the idea is this. We want to be able to have a remote debug machine. Let's say I'm in Pasadena, and I want to connect to a robot that is in Boston. So I want to be able to do that. So how do we configure the discoverability of the Rust system so that's something possible, right? So one of the solutions that you can think of is use the default DDS configuration that uses multicast as default, and use a different namespace for each robot so there's no collisions in the different topics, right? So problems of this approach are evident. All robots will discover each other in the same network, so that would mean that node A in robot 1 would know about node B in robot 20, right? So you can imagine that this is not scalable at all. And we actually did some tests. I hijacked some computers from my colleagues in my office and run like a Docker swarm, each instantiating a new Rust 2 system, and the moment I started scaling it from 10 to 30, 50, everything started to crash. Because, of course, the DDS system doesn't scale very nicely with a number of participants. Of course, then you have the network saturation of multicast messages, slow discovery. And also, the problem with multicast is that multicast messages don't go beyond the router that you send them through, right? I mean, you can by specifying an option of how many jumps across routers you want to make, but by default, a multicast message that is sent in Pasadena, for example, is not going to reach London. So we move on with a different thing. We try a different solution. And we said, okay, why don't we use ROS domain IDs, right? So now we isolate each robot in its own domain, a physical domain. And in that case, the robots will not see each other. And this has, again, some problems. It's interesting, but some problems. There's limited number of domain IDs. By default, there's around 256 domain IDs that can be changed with the DDS configuration. But also, there's a problem of the assignment. How do we assign those domain IDs? If you have thousands of robots, they may be collisions also. They may be multiple robots in the same domain IDs. But still more important, we haven't solved the network clogging, right? All these robots will be sending messages, multicast messages around the network will cause a lot of traffic. So we say, okay, this doesn't work either. Let's try something different. Why don't we disable multicast discovery by default in each robot? And the moment we want to access a robot from a remote machine, what we do is we start a DDS instance. In that DDS instance, we assign the IP of the robot we want to access in the initial peers list for unicast discovery. So when this DDS instance starts, it will send a discovery message to that IP, the robot will reply, and now the remote machine and robot will see each other. And remember that the robot has a single process application, so there's no need of discoverability for their own nodes, right? So this is a workaround that we found. And we can show you how we do it with the configuration of Cyclone DDS. So we can see that we disabled multicast. And we added here a peer address, right? And you can see that it says robot IP in brackets. That thing, basically, when the DDS starts, it replaces robot IP with the value of the environmental variable that stores it. So I can run this command here, robot IP something, and ask for the topic list. So in this case, this command will retrieve all the topics from that specific robot. So as you can see, this is a workaround. It's not using the standard tools of ROS2. So we are thinking and we want to propose or to start thinking about new ways of tackling this problem, maybe adding some ways to some APIs and new APIs to configure the way the robot, the discoverability of the robots may, for example, assigning IPs at runtime, assign or disable multicast or unicast at runtime. So we can move towards this direction in a more unified way. All right, that's it. If you have any questions.
Thanks a lot. So we've got a couple questions. Start on the right here.
Hi, two quick questions. One is, when you were measuring the performance of your system, how many times did you run this test? And I wonder, what was the jitter of your numbers? Basically, the distribution of the numbers. That's the first question. The second question is about IPC. I still don't get, how is it fundamentally different from the default IPC that's that you guys replaced?
Well, for the first question, we run this test a lot of times. We are actually using this configuration and this benchmark application since several months. We tested throughout all the different ROS2 distribution. We tested in Bouncy. We tested again when Crystal came out, throughout the whole Crystal, and then in Dashi again. So we think that we found very good results. The jitter is not very high. Running these experiments for minutes or hours has consistent results. For what concerns the IPC, the main difference is that we don't use these meta messages. These meta messages were basically the memory address that was sent through the DDS from the publisher to the subscription. This has the same overhead of sending standard ROS messages without intra-process communication using the DDS. We cut out that component. The main reason for that component was that it was useful for enforcing some quality of service options and in order to have a consistent behavior with this particular quality of service between intra-process enabled and intra-process disabled. So we decided to get rid of this feature in order to achieve the performance result that should be the main objective of an intra-process communication manager.
Okay, thank you.
I guess we got two quick ones, hopefully.
All right. So first of all, thank you guys for coming. I think it's great to have you here at ROSCON. So two quick questions. The first one is, how far are you from bringing this to the real product? The second one is, how can we help you? I mean, the community. Can you point out to a specific product that we can use to reproduce this, and if you're, in case that is of your interest?
Could you repeat the second question, please?
Yeah, the second question is about whether you could point out to one of your specific products that we can buy and we can use to reproduce these results directly.
Well, for this question, all these results have been obtained using a Raspberry Pi. So if you go to the URL that you find in the slides, this repository contains this result, this plot that we show, much more results, and the exact command line execution in order to recreate them. So you can just go there, you build this this package, and you can reproduce this result on a Raspberry Pi.
Great, thank you. And regarding
we also provide the cross-compilation instruction for compiling this on a Raspberry Pi as well.
Pretty cool, thank you.
For the first question, this was an exploratory phase. At first, when we tried ROS, we found out that it was not meeting any of our requirements. However, what we got is that through some improvement, and we saw that the community in this conference is providing a lot of other options for improving ROS2 performance, and this is becoming a critical topic in ROS2, we have been able to meet our requirements. So we hope that in the next future, we're going to be able to release products with ROS2.
So yeah, for now, we met all the requirements in ROS2, and the ball is on our court. So right now, we're reshaping, refactoring our code base to make it more modular so we can wrap all our existing modules in ROS2. That's our... So we expect some couple months from now until that's
all right.
complete, yeah.
Very cool. Thank you, guys. Looking forward for that.
Okay, Matt, you've been waiting. I got to just make sure it's quick.
I'll try to be quick. It was about the blacklisting. So the changes to enable blacklisting, is that available now upstream for anyone?
Those are configuration in the configuration files of the DDS. So it's DDS specific. So for faster GPS, you will have to change an XML file. I think for second DDS, there's another XML file. I'm not sure if it has that option. That's it, second DDS. Yeah, we think it has. So it's a DDS option that is configurable via
Okay, yeah, all right. I didn't understand that. Thank you.
Yeah.
Is there anything like whitelisting? Because I would think whitelisting would be a little easier if you, rather than having to exclude a lot of things, you would just have a minimal included set.
Yeah, actually, whitelisting is for sure easier. But one of the drawbacks of whitelisting is that, for example, you have your robot with blacklist or whitelist. When it works on its own, it's fine in both cases, and whitelist is easier to write. But what about when you have your robot and you want to connect using your development machine, using some experimental product to this robot? With a blacklist, you can do that. With a whitelist, your new device will, your new nodes will not be part of the whitelist. That's why we call that a blacklist. But yeah, for other, in regular cases, a whitelist would be simpler to write.
Debug, so if you don't need that debug access, then whitelisting would be fine. But,
exactly. Okay, if you don't need debug access, a whitelist would be equivalent, at probably even better.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you.